You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner, Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
Welcome aboard to New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580. The gang from Prout Financial Design is in, including one Mr. Dennis Prout. Welcome back, sir.
Well, it is so good to be here. Welcome to spring and gorgeous, right?
It's beautiful.
Wow, isn't that beautiful? I think everybody, including the birds, are agreeing with that. It's a pleasure to have you here with us on Thursday morning, the 25th of May. Man, it's fun to be back in. I think I've been out for a couple weeks, and it's great to be here. And still get great comments from listeners. You guys did a great job filling in, by the way. Thank you to Heidi and Deanne.
Certainly.
For making those shows go. And Heidi Cartwright, our own retirement income certified professional and managing executive. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here, and it is supposed to be a lovely weekend. So.
You bet. They'll take it. Weather's progressively getting warmer. Only thing, of course, is we need some rain.
Yes.
Yeah.
But not this weekend.
Hoping for that, too, eventually.
Maybe next week.
Right.
And just then, at night.
Yeah.
Oh,
at
night.
You
go. Yeah.
Right.
Perfect.
That'd work. And then Deanne Jennings, our own Director of Operations. Welcome, Deanne.
Thank you, Dennis. Good morning and happy Memorial Weekend, everyone.
Hey.
So it's been quite a few weeks, too. Reminiscences. Last week we had the open house. Was that last Thursday and Friday? Am I right about that?
I think it was
the week before.
Yeah, 2 weeks
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, the week before already.
Yes.
Already. Where were you, Dennis?
Yeah. Time flies.
So just thanks, Eric Campbell designed our wayfinding signs and all the rest. We had a ton of fun with that. We've already got we've had sign-ups for the Lunch and Learns. That's already moving forward.
Yes.
I think our first
mm-hmm.
one is June 21st.
Well, Deanne has all that information
look at that.
For us.
I do. Our upcoming Lunch and Learns, the first one is June 21st. And it's on Social Security, and it's just learning about Social Security retirement disability benefits for your dependents. The second one is July 19th, ABCs of RMDs and QCDs, which will be great about learn more about RMDs and QCDs. And
distributions required,
yes,
whether it's 73 and or QCDs at 70 and a half.
We're
taking
try
those
to,
monies out of your IRA.
We're going to try to use as many acronyms as possible
no kidding.
To get all those letters
so,
in.
Yeah.
And the third one is August 16th, avoiding 60-day rollover mistakes. So if you're interested, I heard that, so they're on Wednesdays, every third Wednesday of the month, 12 to 1 p.m. And if you're interested, just call our office and ask for Beth at 231-947-3992, or you can email Beth and sign up at beth@proutfinancialdesign.com.
And that's for everyone, not just clients.
Exactly. And they're half, my understanding is they're half full already.
Yes.
So sign up if you're interested.
These are learning classes. Mm-hmm. No sales. We're talking about information for you, okay? And I am just wound about that because, you know, we got a couple of screens there so you can see what the heck is she talking about, Bertha? You know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about? And the materials we'll have for you as well.
Do you look at it. Bring a brown bag with you or...
Oh, good question.
What are we doing
for
food anyway?
There will be like light sandwiches and chips. Yeah.
Just a light lunch.
Drinks. Yeah, so. Non-alcoholic, of course.
Yes.
What did he say again?
And chocolate.
Yes. There's always chocolate.
Always chocolate.
We confess our addictions readily. Now, the other thing in regards to going back to the open houses, I just have to give a shout out to Cambria Sweets. They did all the food for this thing, and it was amazing. I mean, we had some clients. Yeah. It was so funny.
So good.
We were going to go out to dinner, but we think we're just going to hang and eat here. You know? So.
It tasted good, but it looked beautiful.
Oh,
and the servers were just above and beyond so nice.
They were. Tents, the balloons. Chamber of Commerce came by. We did the old, you know, cutting the ribbon ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Radically fun. And the number of people who came out. Thank you to all of you who did. It just made it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it was fun. So we really appreciated all the interest and the smiles. It was just a ton of fun. So today, we're talking about the twilight zone of the economy. And Heidi, too, has some great information. Workers, or worker information. What are their goals, their concerns, their issues, some possible solves, some great stats related to that, and then Deanne is weighing in with her own stats, too. So they're going to try to steal each other's show, and that's just fine with me.
Stat it up.
So Rod Serling's Twilight Zone TV episodes were known for their unpredictable and often ambiguous endings and could be seen as a reflection of the uncertainties and surprises that exist in the economic and financial markets today. Take a breath.
It's an excursion into the odd and into the very, very different.
Perfect timing.
We hope you'll share this very strange experience.
That's great.
I'm sure some of you remember that show. I was always kind of freaked out by that show when I was a kid. Like,
I was enough. I didn't watch it more than a couple times. Yeah. So that's not my thing.
Not your style?
Yeah. Watched baseball.
Yeah, that was always fun. Yeah. You know, Al Kaline and all the rest.
There you go.
Babe Ruth.
Oh, no.
Who?
Yeah. The show dealt mostly with science fiction and supernatural themes. Its underlying message often explored human nature, societal issues, and unpredictability. Similarly, now this is from Rob, our economic advisor, who we hear from on a biweekly basis. And there's so much good information in here. I wanted to share it in regards to the economy and some information I've not seen before in terms of measures to help us all possibly navigate. The economic and financial markets today are characterized by a high degree of uncertainty. Current technological advancements, geopolitical events, global economic conditions, policy decisions, all will contribute to surprises and unexpected outcomes, including presidential announcements. Apparently, Ron DeSantis had some trouble with technology last night.
Twitter.
Yeah. The Twitter universe. So, isn't it interesting to think about how we get it? I hear more from clients. I've heard more from clients in the last, last 3 to 4 weeks or so, concerned about these very things. So much going on in the political universe, a concern about leadership, concern about wacko leadership overseas, really crazy stuff that we see regarding Russia and Ukraine, of course, and then China. There's so much going on. So the Twilight Zone ending serves as a reminder that despite efforts to analyze and forecast market movements, there are too many more surprises in today's financial world to be confident. That leads into a discussion of the macroeconomic uncertainty index. The M is in macroeconomic uncertainty index, MUI. So the professor's approach, there are three. Sidney Ludvigson of New York University. I looked up her website. Incredibly bright. Kyle Jurado of Duke University and Serena NG, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, of Columbia University. They published their model several years ago in a financial journal called the American Economic Review. The professor's approach to measuring uncertainty, and here we go, focuses on the predictability of 132 separate economic variables. So they're sampling 132 variables, turning this much more into an exercise of measuring what these economic indicators are saying. And basically what they're saying is the more variance between the estimate and the actual number, the more concern about what the stock markets are going to be performing as. So the more variability between the actual number and the estimate, that's where the problem is. Are you with me, everybody?
We are with mm-hmm. you.
Excellent. Yes. Excellent. Yes, indeed. So, uncertainty and risk are assumed to be low when these variables' predictability is high, which is when the forecasters were mostly right. So when they were right there, we think inflation is going to be at 3, and it came in at 3.1. Okay, hey, you're good. But as an example, back here in page 3, go with me, okay? The annualized core inflation in 2022's fourth quarter was changed from 3.1 to 4.3. A 40% variance. That's where the problem lies.
I read a lot of that, the unemployment numbers and the inflation numbers, but especially the unemployment numbers, are released monthly or quarterly.
Yeah.
But then quietly, like a few weeks later, they go, oh, we're going to update that. Here's what they're...
what they actually were.
Yeah, they continually come out. And, of course, what they release the second time around is worse than what it was initially.
Yeah, when you're shaking your head and you go... You know, those guys, do they really know anything? Well, there's part of that for sure. But when they're way off in their estimates, that's when there's more cause for concern.
Yeah.
See, that's why you're listening to this. I mean, really, have you heard this anywhere else? The answer to that is no. They would have all been asleep, Dennis. No, I know. It's always, we're trying to disseminate information, and that's why I'm... honestly excited about this and about the information that Heidi is sharing. It's good stuff. So we have some good people to reference. And by the way, next week, since we have so much to talk about and Dennis decided to go down a rabbit trail, next week we're going to be talking about charitable giving through IRAs. The Ed Slott newsletter
has a really good article on that.
A fantastic article.
It's really great.
Yeah, penned by yours truly, so we'll talk about that. There's some information in there that we think will be helpful.
Mm-hmm. So your three professors here, they have 132 variables they put into their model.
Yeah.
And what are they saying? What do we know about the current economic
indicators?
Currently,
the MUI,
Macroeconomic Uncertainty Index,
is higher than 90% of all the MUI's monthly readings since 1960.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that goes back before some of us were born, Ron.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Current readings for the MUI are available on Dr. Ludvigsen's website. Chart shown below tells the story, so everyone wants to see.
Okay, it's spiked.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's spiking.
It spiked in 1980. It spiked in 2000, 2007.
80 was all the inflation, the Iran thing, and then the presidential election, Carter to Reagan.
Reagan. Carter to Reagan, 2007. The whole mortgage thing, stock market went from about 14,000 in October of 07 to March of 09 to about 6,500.
Wow.
We'll just call it half.
Mm-hmm. Significant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in 2020, COVID.
Yeah. COVID.
Anybody remember COVID?
We try not to.
Yeah. To demonstrate the underperformance of stock prices when the MUI is elevated, Brooks calculated the stock market's performance during those months when the MUI is greater than 1. 1. 1 is the average, okay? And the numbers right now, relative to its long-term average return, the stock market's annualized return, now, by no means are we saying the market is going to do this, It's simply another indicator, but it's another indication of concern. So, you know, if you're looking at the weather and you're a farmer, mm-hmm. there are certain indicators that you look at. Looking at the sky, the winds, all the rest, well, to indicate. And like last night, well, obviously there was a forecast of frost. In some areas that happened. Given that it's still and 34 in some areas, probably happened, right? So the market's annualized return was a negative 16% during those high MUI months versus a plus 6% during the low months. So it's a good indicator of concern and reason right. for concern. So allocate accordingly, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just have to say, all right, am I willing to undergo that? Now, we have referenced before April of 2020 when the market went down to the degree that it did, which I reference maybe 35% or so estimations. And then in April of 20, it had the biggest uptick for any month in how many years, class?
100.
Well, that's close.
Yeah.
30. In 30 years.
Close.
If you round.
So
that
is zero.
Biggest,
yeah. Rounding down just a bit. How did we find you anyway, Ron? This is the best ever. I mean, really, right?
I'm an imposter.
Yeah, the confusing U.S. economy, the post-pandemic economy is confusing. You know, we get that. They get that, too. They're trying to read these tea leaves, and they're being stirred in so many directions. It's difficult. Now, here's a good indicator. Over the past year, the range of analyst expectations for quarterly economic growth has been twice as wide as in 19. That means the economists are trying to guesstimate where things are. And it's another indicator going back to this saying the range, they've just been out of sorts with where things are.
Hmm.
In the IMF's International Monetary Fund latest global economic report, the word uncertainty appeared 60 times. At the European Central Bank's most recent monetary policy meeting, Christine Lagarde, its president, said, "It is not possible to determine at this point in time what the path will be going forward." Hmm. Not possible.
So they don't know.
Thanks.
Yes and no.
The United States, the BLS, Bureau of Labor Stats. In February, the BLS changed the factors that it applies to inflation. They didn't like what it was showing.
Hmm.
Which makes interpreting monthly inflation rates much more difficult. Annualized, I think I referenced this, annualized core inflation in 2022's, in fact, I know I did, fourth quarter was changed from 3.1 to 4.3. So 4.3, these variances are another good indicator of where things are. And it goes on to say, the article, now's the time to get ahead of inflation's resurgence. So while prices have come down for some assets related to being good inflation hedges, they're saying, this is from Simon White of Bloomberg, a pretty good reputation, that now's the time to possibly add to sectors of the economy that can help you fight inflation with your portfolio. What could those be? TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protection Securities, inflation involved, commodities, and including energy as possible areas to allocate toward. It's very interesting reading indeed, and another indicator that we're going to have some rough sailing.
How often do they do that macroeconomic uncertainty index? How often do they update that?
It's continually updated. Continually.
Yep. And they try to predict, like, I mean, roughly, they're saying this is what we think based on 132 variables, where the market will be in a month.
They're just giving the history of actually what the market has done with those indicators. But they're simply telling you how much out of variance, or how much variance there is, rather, in those indicators, measuring those, and then, you know, you can see for yourself how far out of sync that is and draw inferences to how that may help you. That's why I like this, because it's simply saying how far out of sorts are those who are estimating the numbers versus what the actual numbers are? Well, I think the wind will be at 5 miles an hour today. Well, it's no 10.
There's
you know,
more
that sort of thing.
Sort of like there's more risk because it's more unpredictable. The environment's more unpredictable, so there's more risk to people.
And not, in their numbers are not coming in according to the to the estimates.
Okay. But we're in territory we haven't been before. I think. I mean, like you mentioned, you have China and then Russia, Ukraine, internationally,
Taiwan.
Then you have the energy economy, which is really uncertain right now in the U.S. and
That's
worldwide.
Right. Yeah.
So. Well, and COVID distorted a lot of numbers.
COVID,
so
yeah.
When you get those year-over-year data, it's really hard to interpret it because we purposely shut down portions of the economy. So that messed with the numbers. So it's really hard to have a consistent pattern with that kind of disruption.
I like how the article referenced it's like we're coming out of a tailwind and possibly entering a headwind.
There we go.
Interesting. Yeah.
But it is hard, like if you look at auto sales and everything, all the components that go into auto sales, and you can graph that out, as I'm sure they do, but right now you can't say, well, based on last year, here's what probably will happen this year, because the auto industry is totally undergoing a forced transition.
Absolutely.
So that's
so some
makes
of it's
it difficult.
Forced by the market, people's demand. Some of it's forced by government. The EV revolution, if you will. Everybody gets that. So yes, that's what adds to that difficulty.
I have a general question.
Yes, sir.
I've got the markets up here, and the Dow Jones is down 61 right now as we speak live. It's 10:30 on Thursday, May 25th. Okay, if you're listening Saturday, this is obviously recorded. But so it's down 61. Since you've been talking, it was up 90, down 50. It's been up and down. But the S&P is up 20, and the Nasdaq's up 147. Why does that happen sometime where you have certain markets of the S&P, Dow, and NASDAQ, or the Russell, some will be up while others are down?
Well, because they're very different stocks, very different companies. And Deanne's going to actually have some details on those stats. I'm sorry you fell right into the trap there, Ron. I mean, he just can't help it.
I know.
But you have very different companies. In the Dow, there are 30 very conservative large companies in that portfolio. In NASDAQ, tend to be smaller, more tech-orientated. The tech revolution still continues to unfold. The AI, you know, everybody's reading articles about, oh, my gosh, you know, what's that going to look like? When you hear Elon Musk shouting warnings about that, not shouting, but, you know, he's warning about what AI is going to be doing and that we should pause as an example. When the techies are saying we ought to pause on it, there's some elements of it, obviously, then, that are very concerning.
Ah.
So the whole tech revolution continues to unfold, and up close and personal, Nathan bought a new computer for our office.
Mm.
And I looked at the computer. Now, this is a not a laptop computer. Did I mention this already?
No.
He hates to repeat himself. So he bought this new computer that, you know, sits in the office. Again, it's not a laptop. It's not an iPad. It's a regular computer. He put the computer on the desk, the conference table, and I'm not exaggerating. It was about 7 inches long and about 5 inches wide and about an inch and a half thick.
The actual, the hard drive.
The hard drive,
the
desktop
whole stinking computer. And he looks at me and he goes, it's solid state.
Hmm.
Okay, whatever.
Whatever.
I don't know. It could be Hostess Twinkies inside. Who cares? Right? But it's so stinking small.
How about people who have all that on their watch?
No kidding.
Do you have one of those?
I do, indeed.
See, Dennis, the power of the world is on your watch there.
And it told me how slow I was walking. Get going, you man. No, that sort of thing. It's crazy, the miniaturization.
And we do have a question here. My husband and I are new grandparents. We're looking into starting a 529 for our granddaughter who lives in Virginia. One of us would be the account holder with the granddaughter as the beneficiary.
Right.
Questions. Is this a good option for us with regard to taxes?
Well, you don't get a deduction for putting the money in.
Okay.
But the account grows tax-free if the granddaughter uses the funds for cost related to school, higher education generally, okay?
And that'll be like 18 years if they're new grandparents now, right?
Could potentially be. You know, we're talking computers,
books.
Could be your pet robot supplies. In 18 years.
It could. I don't know if it's a pet robot. It could be a robot to help with studying.
Get back to work.
You know, that sort of thing. Yes, and
so the other question related to that, can the granddaughter be the beneficiary of another 529 available in her state since she lives in Virginia and her parents want to start one too?
Yeah, if someone else is funding it, for sure. Yeah, because each of the applicable limits that one can put, the amounts that one can put in, apply to that individual.
Is that something you can contribute to annually if you want to?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, and just another thing to check out, whatever custodian that you choose, wherever you intend to invest the money, whether a mutual fund company, brokerage, or whatever it is, you want to check and see what state their plan is with. Each different custodian may have a different state, or there's some that are specific to the state you live in. So you want to check out all those options.
Right, and makes many of the sponsors of these plans have great brochures on what's allowed and what isn't allowed and how this can benefit. So if the granddaughter doesn't wind up using it, in essence, you can transfer it to other grandkids if you'd like. Or if the granddaughter would use it for a cost other than for higher education, she'd pay a penalty on the interest of 10% on the interest earned. Plus any taxes, but that's it. So it grows tax deferred for the time frame that the grandchild, in this case, has the funds.
And you can switch the beneficiary as well, which is a nice option.
Yeah, which is what I'm saying. You bet.
Yeah.
So next, Heidi, next up is workers say they need over $1 million to retire. Most expect to miss that goal.
Right, so this is an article that comes to us through Yahoo, and they are talking in this article about a survey that was taken by Schroders. And millennial workers in that survey predicted that they would need to accumulate $1.3 million, but only 29% expected to actually reach that target. Now, the older workers, 45 and older, that were in the survey, they guessed it would take about $1.1 million for a comfortable retirement, but only 21% of that group foresaw hitting that benchmark, which was down from 24%, so down 3% over the last year. So some of these things that Dennis has been talking about and the uncertainty and how we're having difficulty predicting what's going to happen next, you can see how some of those, the consequence of that kind of environment, it comes down to the investor and affects their attitude and some of their expectations. So, workers between the age 27 and 79, that's the survey was taken of those age groups.
27 and 79?
Yeah, the ages from 27 to 79. That was the group that was surveyed in this Schroders survey.
Right. A survey of 2,000 workers between those ages. So it's a pretty good sampling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the millennial group in that, and if you need to know what millennials are, I did look that up. Those are people born between 1981 and 1996, because I get mixed up between X and Y. And
I do too. All that.
So like late 20s to about 40-ish.
So nearly half of the millennials, 49%, said that they'll accrue less than $500,000 for their retirement. And 59% of workers 45 and over said they expected to have less than $500,000. So just trying to show you the bar, people are putting that $1 million bar up, but when they look at their own finances, they don't see themselves getting there. Now, another survey was brought up in this article, and that was done by Fidelity, and it was an online survey of 3,569 workers. The American savers are estimated to have only 78% of the income needed to cover expenses during retirement. So of that survey, 78% of the income needed. So that's They don't think they're going to have enough to cover all of those expenses.
Basic expenses, yeah.
Basic expenses. And that also is a decline from an all-time high of that statistics, which was 83% of expenses in 2020. So you can see the eroding nature of people's confidence in their ability to have a comfortable or meet their expenses in retirement. More than one-third or 34% of the households are in the red on the preparedness spectrum. That means people who are getting ready to retire, who are saving for retirement. So then this comes around to the question, well, why? Why is this? Why are people behind or feel a lack of confidence? And they boiled it down to a couple of things. One, they said, was that lack of education. And also lack of planning. So these are two things that we're trying to help you do with this show, with our Lunch and Learns. Get that education, get you start thinking about these things and some of the goals you need to have. So,
in essence, how do you continue to play offense when there are a lot of threats, you know, emotionally maybe? Mm-hmm. And it just, how do I continue to move forward even though there are a lot of issues related to the economy, possibly. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and one of those reactions, a natural reaction, is during challenging financial environment, like the pandemic and the market volatility, it sort of points people to invest more conservatively and maybe too soon, or depending on your timeline and your individual situation, you always need to go through that to see if you're investing appropriately.
Right. And what may feel aggressive at any given point in time may be too conservative in some respects, because the time frame alone can make a significant difference in your ability to recover, and also to answer the fact or the issue that you may be wrong. You know, that's always the issue. Well, what if all of my prognostications are wrong about this? Nobody predicted, you know, what was going to happen with the market. So many different times that we've talked about, who would have guessed that the market would have done what it's done in the last 10 to 15 years?
So the uncertainty, we have war, we have economy, we have all this uncertainty. Thinking about the market, what could affect the market negatively?
Yes.
What could happen, what possibly could happen, what effects that would say, hey, the market's been shooting up steadily now. What kind of things, events could happen there? The end of a war or what?
Well, yeah, we could see a successful resolution of Ukraine-Russia issue. We could see a successful resolution of the debt issue in Washington, D.C., where they actually get their heads together. Mm-hmm. Crickets on that one. Okay.
Or maybe energy. Maybe some of the restrictions on energy removed and energy becoming cheaper. That's a
yeah. So mover. More pipelines approved, that sort of thing, where the flow of energy is much freer, if you will. And we have so much in supply that we become an exporting nation. Who would have believed that? Mm-hmm. That has happened once. Yes. So given that reality, if minor changes are made, that could all change that. But the question becomes, in essence, how do you change? Mm-hmm. What can you do about it? That's always what it's about, isn't it? Because we are all, if I may preach briefly, we always are going to have these uncertainties out there. They will always exist. Mm-hmm. But what can you do about it? How can you bring that control back to yourself?
Which is a great lead-in to this next point in the article, Dennis. It says that, you know, actually when it comes down to it, very few workers actually run the numbers of what are they going to need and what should their goal be. Just 46% of workers have even tried to calculate how much money they will need to pay for living expenses in retirement. And that's down from 50% in 2021.
So while you may not want to know, I mean, that's reality, right?
Yeah.
Do I really want to know that? Mm-hmm. You know, prepare yourself for it if you need to. Seriously, how much are we going to need? Once you've written that down and found that out, you've removed most of the uncertainty that most people will experience, and you've given yourself so much more control. What do we need a month to live? Is it 3,000, 4,000, 10,000? You know, what is that number? Given that we know it, all of a sudden, you can deal with the issue.
Gives you a target.
It gives you a target to live with and deal with.
And it's pretty empowering.
It
once
is.
Once you know the answers
to
the things that you can control, we can't control war, we can't control the government, but we can control our own numbers to a certain extent. It
That's
gives you
empowering.
More power.
It does.
Now, when you're running the numbers, they point out in this article two areas where people underestimate or they make miscalculations. One is most people retire actually earlier than they intend to or they plan for. And we've seen this before, haven't we, Dennis?
The stats in the Retirement Planning Today course show that it's a shock, honestly. Many estimate they're going to retire at 65 to 67, but many times it's much earlier due to their own health issues, job changes out of their control, all that sort of thing.
Right. And then a second area is people, or most Americans, tend to underestimate what their health costs are going to be in retirement. They're usually much higher than people anticipate.
Yeah, what we usually see within the financial plan is an estimated increase of about 6%, given the reality of what health costs have actually increased by. That's what the financial plans are estimated, about a 6% increase per year on healthcare costs.
Right. And so this article is recommending that people, they give some stats on what they recommend people save. Now, we do not know what their assumptions are in these cases, so we just want to say this is this article that is giving us an example, but they're not telling us all the underlying assumptions. But they say people should aim to save at least 15% of their pre-retirement income each year, which includes your employer match. And that's the amount of money if you're in an employer plan that the employer puts in on your behalf. With a goal to save 10 times your pre-retirement income by age 67.
Let's say your pre-retirement income, obviously, then is $100,000. The goal would be to have $1 million saved aside at age 67.
There you go. All right, so some things to be aware of and to be careful of. One of those is if you are considering changing jobs. A lot of people have changed jobs over the last couple of years. When you're doing this long-term savings, you want to steer clear of the temptation to cash out some or all of your retirement accounts. 41.4% of workers between 2014 and 2016 did just that. And a whopping 85% of those who took money out took out the entire balance that they had saved up in their employer plan.
Yeah, this reminds me of growing up. Just because everyone else is doing it, should you be doing it, Dennis? No, I shouldn't be. So, you know, that sort of thing. Because what are they paying? Usually they're always paying the tax on that. And they may well be paying a penalty as well.
Exactly.
So the cost for that money in real dollars, you know, 30% of whatever you take out, approximately 30% of 10 grand, $3,000. Ouch.
Ouch.
Right.
So they recommend, especially if you're younger, to tune out the day-to-day and month-to-month and even year-to-year ups and downs because you're in this investment for the long term.
Unless you're listening to us. I mean, really, right?
So anyway, there are all these different levers that you can use that are available for people who want to catch up. If you're over 50, there's expanded contribution limits. So it's a great idea to come in and talk to a financial advisor or talk to your accountant and find out what are some ways that you can get to those goals and get that savings done. The hardest thing is just starting or doing it.
That's such a good point. Can be very daunting to figure out all your financial needs and to think that you have to do it by yourself, but it'd be so good to seek out a financial professional in that time to come alongside you and help you.
You bet. Coaching. Next, stats. Deanne, help us.
Absolutely. As of May 17th, 2023, four U.S. public companies were members of the $1+ trillion market cap club. And those members include Apple, Microsoft, Alphabet, and Amazon. The $7.7 trillion combined market cap of these four mega cap stocks makes up 21% of the S&P 500. And all four are up more than 30% year-to-date. And that
year-to-date.
Source is bespoke. Year-to-date.
For 5 months. Mm-hmm. Isn't that incredible?
Yes. Those companies make up 21% of the S&P 500.
$7.7 trillion they're worth.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible values, huh?
Absolutely. And this could be a possible indicator of the economy we were talking about earlier. Of all consumer loans outstanding, 3% moved into delinquent status in the first quarter. During the quarter, 6.9% of all auto loans and 6.5% of credit card accounts moved into delinquent status. Hmm. For both categories, these levels are post-pandemic highs, and that source is New York Fed.
Another cause for concern. Mm-hmm. It certainly looks like we're heading into some kind of a recession. We'll see what that looks like.
Fridays have been the best day of the week for the S&P 500 so far in 2023. We knew there's a reason we like Fridays, right? Mm-hmm. Through May 12th, the S&P 500 averaged a gain of 0.34% on Fridays this year. The next best weekday was Monday, has average gain of just 0.17%. While Fridays and Mondays have average gains in 2023, Tuesdays have averaged a decline of 0.13% with gains just 30% of the time, and that source is bespoke.
So watch out for Tuesday.
Yeah. As politicians wrangle over the government debt ceiling, consumer debt topped $17 trillion in the first quarter of the first time. Over 70% of total debt consists of mortgages, but student loans, car loans, and credit cards each amount to at least $1 trillion.
Oops.
Credit card debt also grew at the fastest pace of any category, rising a record of 17.2% over the past year, and that's New York Fed.
Didn't mean to drown you out there. That's our closing music there.
Wow.
Yeah. Went by
fast.
Here
we are.
Yeah,
it did.
Yep.
And we're going to get that disclosure updated, too. We'll get that done. You got it wrong. Awesome. Thank you.
So, Prout Financial Design, 947-3992. You've got Lunch and Learn starting up June 21st.
Yes.
You need
yes,
a reservation, right? Or register.
Yep.
It's free, but you need to register.
Yep.
All right. And you've got Lunch and Learn. Oh, there.
Yep.
All right. June 21st is the next one there.
Yep. Call our office at 231-947-3992.
There we go. Thanks all. Dennis Prout, Deanne Jennings, Heidi Cartwright. Thank you all for being in.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.